Hello, and welcome to another episode of The Degree Burn. My name is Nigel Spink, and with me today is Tim Elliott.
Hello.
And we are going to be looking at the next two issues of the West Coast Avengers, or Avengers West Coast, as it will change its name to be. And today, I believe, we're looking then at issues 46 and 47. And Tim, I think you have the synopsis for the first of these two issues.
I do. And you have the second one. This show is just going to be the two of us. So we're doing Las Vegas and Japan here.
Yep.
And this will be a follow-up. We have covered previously, it was you and me and Kirk, and we covered 44 and 45, which was the end of the Vision Quest storyline. Resolved that. So now we're starting some new directions and picking up on a few threads from their previous issues. And I have, you'll see when I rate it, but I decided to have a little fun with my synopsis, so it's not my straightforward one. It's a little different format. Just because, and I had to write it quickly because to pull back the curtain, we're dealing with our dog is going through chemo, and she's been in and out of the emergency room, so that's been taking up a lot of our time. So I wasn't able to prep as much as I normally could, so I apologize for that. But West Coast Avengers, or actually this is West Coast Avengers, it becomes Avengers West Coast with your issue, I believe.
That's right, yep. Yeah.
West Coast Avengers number 46. It's had a cover price of 75 cents. Our writer artist is John Byrne. Our inker is Mike Macklin. Colorist is Bob Sharon, who I believe is different from the previous issue. Our letterer is Bill Oakley. Cover artist by John Byrne. And our editor is Howard Mackey. And our editor-in-chief is Tom DeFalco. Release date of March 7th, 1989, with a cover date of July 1989. These two stories are reprinted in Avengers West Coast Vision Quest, trade paperback, Great Lakes, or GLA, Misassembled, trade paperback, and the Avengers Omnibus, or Avengers by John Byrne Omnibus, and the Avengers West Coast Epic Collection. Our other books that Byrne did at the same month were, he's continuing his mini-death of the Batmans with Batman number 435, that's part 3. He's just a writer on that. He did the cover art for Marvel Age 76. He is a writer and cover artist for Avengers 305. And he is writer, artist, inker on Sensational She-Hulk number 3. So this is West Coast Avengers number 46, is entitled Franchise. The following is expert from the official Avengers debrief 310, codename Franchise. Following individuals are referenced in this document. Mr. Immortal, Flatman, Big Bertha, Dinosaur, Doorman, Hawkeye, a.k.a. Clint Barton, Mockingbird, a.k.a. Bobby Barton, U.S. Agent, a.k.a. Jack Daniels, Tigra, a.k.a. Greer Nielsen, and Scarlet Witch, a.k.a. Wanda Maximoff. The following events cannot be confirmed or were assembled from eyewitness and interviews from those involved. Location, Milwaukee Farmers and Merchants Trust Building. Events, four masked men with automatic weapons broke in and held the building's occupants hostage. They attempted to take off with the bank's funds, amount unconfirmed, but they were stopped by five individuals now identified as Mr. Immortal, a man who was reportedly unkillable, Flatman, a man with powers similar to Reed Richards, see Mr. Fantastic, Big Bertha, a renowned woman who reports say has heightened strength and a certain level of invulnerability, Dinosaur, an individual with pink skin and wings, sex unconfirmed. And Doorman, a man who appears to have the power to open portals through solid walls. Group who later refers to themselves as the Great Lake Avengers, thwarted the robbers and delivered them to the authorities. Mr. Immortal, who made first contact with the gunman, took several bullet wounds to the chest, but has made a complete recovery. Flatman was able to secure the hostages and remove them from danger. Big Bertha allegedly walked through the building's wall, was able to repel machine gun fire while the silent dinosaur gained entry through Doorman and flew around confusing the gunman. She was also instrumental in calming Mr. Immortal once he recovered from his wounds. When witnesses report he lost control and continually beat one of the robbers. Reporter Peggy Allen, who was on the scene, spoke with Mr. Immortal after the robbers were in custody, and they referred to his group, and he referred to his group as the Great Lakes Avengers. The following events are taken from a report by former Avenger Clint Barton, a.k.a. Hawkeye. Location: Twin Palms Motel. Occupant: Clint Barton. I was taking a shower when I saw the news report of the Great Lakes Avengers. I was going to report in, but I was no longer an Avenger. It was now someone else's problem. Knocking on the door was my soon-to-be ex-wife, Bobby Barton, also known as Mockingbird. A heated argument ensued concerning our pending divorce, and we both said things we would regret. The past few weeks had put a strain on our relationship, and she wanted to know if we could reconcile. She still loved me. The following events are taken from a report by active Avenger Jack Daniels, also known as the U.S. Agent. Location: Avengers Compound, West Coast. I was enjoying a hearty breakfast provided by Avengers cook, Mrs. Higgins. Our cordial conversation was interrupted by a mouse running across the kitchen floor. My fellow Avenger Tigress sprang into the room, chasing the rodent. Tiger has kept to herself since my arrival at the compound a few days ago. I grabbed her by the hair, but she put up a fight. But a quick slap broke her focus on the mouse. She ran off. Mr. Higgins reported Tiger was responsible for keeping the rodent population in check. I found this disgusting, and something had to be done about her eating raw mice. The following events, taken from a report by former Avenger Clint Barton, also known as Hawkeye. Location: Milwaukee, Germana Building. On the suggestion from a Mockingbird, we flew to Milwaukee to check out the new superhero team, the Great Lakes Avengers. She felt this would keep my mind off my leaving the West Coast Avengers. I used several of my flare arrows to draw the team to the Germana Building. Mockingbird and myself, in uniform, were on the building's roof when the team arrived. They seemed to be highly organized, and in a matter of minutes, several had made it to our location. A winged individual was first, but a tangle arrow took care of her. A large woman, who I am told is named Big Bertha, jumped to the roof with a man at her back. He called himself Mr. Immortal and did not believe I was the real Hawkeye. We exchanged blows, but he had the advantage. Mockingbird came to my aid and took him out. He continued to doubt our authenticity, and before we could protest, he threw himself off the roof. Mockingbird was sure he fell to his death. A number of their team, called Flatmen, assured her he was not dead. He cannot be killed. Mockingbird suggested that everyone regroup at their HQ to discuss the situation. Location: apartment of Big Bertha, also known as Ashley Crawford. Myself, Mockingbird, Flatbird, Dinosaur, Mr. Mortal, and Doorman were waiting in the living room of a very expensive-looking apartment. A very striking, slender woman soon joined us. She introduced herself as Big Bertha. Where she put all the extra bulk is unconfirmed. Mockingbird recognized her as Ashley Crawford, a former supermodel. Mockingbird explained, "The Avengers' name is not a franchise, but the group seemed sincere, and they claimed to be very serious about being superheroes. The name came from them wanting to keep the coastal theme of the Avengers. My initial reaction to the Great Lakes Avengers was negative, but after meeting the team, I felt they could be a solid group, with my management, of course." The following events are taken from an interview of Roberto Carlos, West Coast Avengers support staff. Location: West Coast Avengers Compound. I handed a very special delivery letter with a Texas postmark to Miss Wanda Maximoff, also known as the Scarlet Witch. She asked me if I had seen her husband, the Vision. I had not seen the Avenger in 2 days. She thanked me and opened the letters and seemed shocked. The following is a copy of the letter to the Scarlet Witch. "Dear Miss Maximoff, it was with great distress that we heard of the recent tribulations suffered by yourself and your husband. Our robotic staff has, for several years now, been working on a series of projects whose result is a series of computers whose level of artificial intelligence is very nearly approximates that of your husband. Is there any way we can be of assistance, free of charge, in the restoration of the Vision to his fully original capacity? Please contact us at 214-555-0202, extension 29. We hope we can be of service to you at this, your time of great need. Yours truly, Jeremiah Random, Dean of Robotics." To be continued.
Yeah, nice one. Yeah,
yeah. I kind of wanted to play around with it, and I wrote it as a
report.
I was thinking, I was going to kind of write it all as Hawkeye's, but I didn't realize that wouldn't work, so I just continued as a fake report after the events.
Yeah, nice one.
Yeah. Thank you.
Good. Yeah, well done.
Well, so this issue, we are introduced to this new team that Byrne has created called the Great Lakes Avengers. And we don't get a lot of information about them. I know they show up later in these issues, and the team is not resolved until much later. I never wrote anything else about them. So once they are, what their involvement in these issues is all I know of them, really.
Right. Well, yeah. Again, apart from these issues where they appear in Avengers, I didn't see them again until Thunderbolts, I think. They were in Thunderbolts.
Well, I kind of use Wiki to look up the characters. I think several of them, they disband at one point. They become Great Lakes Champions or the Great Lakes.
They keep changing their name.
And several of them, I think several of them die. I think there are a few that are dead.
I'm aware. I think I read somewhere that Dinosaur got killed. I don't know where though, but I'm not sure about anybody else in this particular group.
Yeah. They're a little derivative. I mean, obviously Flatman is very reminiscent of Reed Richards.
Yes. Yeah.
And Big Bertha is a little like
the Blob.
The Blob, if he could change back and forth. You know, if you could shed all that weight.
Yeah. But some of the things that, she's capable of, it reminds me. When they shoot her with the machine gun, when the guys are trying to rob that exchange, and she kind of just sucks in all the bullets into her fat and then fires them back out at that guy. Yeah. That's just like the Blob did in X-Men.
Mr. Immortal to me is a little Deadpool-like. He's with his wisecracking and the fact that he can't die.
Yeah. I don't like that. I didn't like Mr. Immortal for that reason. I thought, oh come on.
Well, it removes all the stakes. It's a little what they would do later with Wolverine. Wolverine just recover from any wound.
As you say, Deadpool. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because this is before Deadpool, isn't it?
I think.
Or is it round about the same time?
It's around about the same time. I think it's before the kind of fourth wall breaking Deadpool, because
when I first encountered Deadpool, he seemed okay. I didn't know about him being, unable to die. He just seemed like a good bad guy. But when they started to make him into more of an anti-hero and the wisecracking and all that, that's when I started to hate him. Yeah, I hate Deadpool. Mr. Immortal.
I mean, they do have a... Byrne does give him a little bit of a character... Not a character burn, but apparently when he recovers, he becomes violent. So it's his reaction to when he comes alive again.
Yeah.
He has like anger issues. So they have to kind of
Which is what he did here. Yeah. Because I wondered about that. I thought, does he just lose it anyway? Or it's the result of him coming back to life, sort of thing.
Mm. Yeah. That's it. Which is odd that he's the leader. Why?
That's another thing. I'd not read it in a while, but I got in my mind that Big Bertha was the leader, but it clearly shows here anyway. He's supposed to be the leader. Yeah, unless they changed it later on, and I'm thinking about when I read them in Thunderbolts, she could have taken over as the leader.
She's kind of the Tony Stark in that she, because of her supermodel career, she has the money and they're using her apartment as a headquarters. I wonder if some of these are, I get this impression, especially from Doorman, they feel like Alpha Flight characters. Doorman does. He looks, for some reason, I get a flashback feel from him from Gamma Flight.
They were going to say someone in Gamma Flight looked similar to that.
It may just be the costume, but
And he's like, Well, I'm going to say he's like, but he probably came first. There's one or two characters been in different issues of different titles, which have that kind of power that they open up a space in reality, as a, and they and you know people can go through to somewhere else. Like in this case, they go through him, though, don't they?
It's a little bit like Cloak from Cloak and Dagger.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I think Flatband makes a mention of it when he goes through him. He says, yeah. "It feels like just I'm in a different dimension or something."
Just for a moment, yeah, I feel like I'm somewhere else. Yeah, yeah, it's here, as if I'm not on Earth anymore. Yeah, 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 yeah. And he reminds me of Warp, who was a character from A-Next, but of course they came a lot long after this. So
that must be. I'm not familiar with.
He's got a similar kind of costume. It's like an all-blue costume, and it covers all his body. He's just got, you know, the things for his eyes. Very similar to this guy's look, except he's black.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm. And Big Bertha also is similar to when in the X-Men, and it's when they are, Mesmero has convinced them or hypnotized them to thinking they are circus performers.
Yeah,
and they're working in I can't remember what that issue run, the teens, I think.
111 when they were in the circus.
That's it, yeah. When I think I just recently read those, when they are breaking out, the other carnies kind of come after them, and there's kind of the fat woman, or the fat lady, is
the
in there.
The fat bearded lady. Yeah,
who kind of that reminds me of... Mm-hmm. Big Bertha.
Yeah.
And even Mr. Immortal, I also get kind of a feeling of Madcap, which is the character.
Right.
Yeah. From Captain America. I don't think he can die. And he's kind of zany and wisecracky. And that's how this guy is. So.
That's right. I get when Mr. Immortal's talking, it seems to be that you should read it in a certain dialect. Do you know what that would be? Because it's obviously an American dialect. But
I never
when he first drops down on the guys with the guns on the second page and he says, "Hope y'all don't mind me dropping in on you like this." How should that sound? It seems to me like, "Hope y'all don't mind me dropping in on that."
Yeah, that's a bit of a bit of the southern accent.
But it's I don't know where people he's... y'all got trussed up. Yeah, it's like what you might call him, the
kind of a southern southern
very, drawl. Yeah,
very blue collar.
Yeah.
I didn't pick up on that. I felt a little more. He's the almost a Spider-Man like. In fact, the way his entrance is almost Spider-Man like. He comes down on ropes or whatever he's on.
Yeah.
And he is very enthusiastic. He's jokey. He is until he gets caught in the chest.
Yeah, until they shoot him.
Yeah. Yeah. And they make a remark of, you know, what, because then everybody starts coming in, you know, Flatman rescues the hostages, and Big Bertha just walks through the wall, and Doorman lets Dinosaur come in.
Yeah.
Who doesn't really do anything except kind of confuse him.
Lie about,
one of them says, "They're popping out of the woodwork. Who are these geeks? Milwaukee don't have no superheroes." And so Mr. Immortal, who's recovered, kind of starts, and that's pretty brutal. He just starts stomping this guy.
Yeah.
And punching his face and then stomping on him. And then he has to be restrained.
Then Flatman gets hold of him.
But
pretty good entrance there.
It's not a bad entrance,
For the team, yeah.
Yeah. And the fact that they're perfectly willing to go out and talk to the...
the press.
The press. And... from reading the backstory, I guess it's Mr. Immortal explains why he's the leader. He's the one that put the team together. He decided when he discovered he was immortal, and apparently he's very, very, very old. And also gets a relationship later with this Dinosaur. She's apparently very old, and he's the only one that can understand her language.
Yeah, it's like
they're like soulmates.
Hypersonics,
yeah.
And she calms him down, yeah.
Yeah.
It calms him down. We don't know what sex it is.
But yeah, it's a nice little entrance. It's a nice little kind of a cold open to and Burner's done a little. He's been kind of playful with the splash page, and that Mr. Immortal is hanging upside down when he introduces himself, and Byrne has flipped it. So the header, the credits, everything is upside down, and his text is upside down. So they flipped it, and he got right side up.
You mean on the splash page?
Yeah, is yours upside down?
He's upside down, but franchise, the title is written across the top as it normally would be, the right way up.
Well, then
and he's saying hi there. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
And then, that is the correct way up for the reader.
Right. Mm. Then my.
And the credits for, the artist and all the rest of it, they're across the top as they would be.
Okay.
Yeah.
Then somebody is on the scan that I'm reading from. Somebody's flipped it. And I thought Burn's known to do that, so that's why I thought maybe he was playing with it. Okay.
Well, in this issue anyway, which is a British version of the original, I guess.
It's probably right.
He's hanging upside down, yes. Yeah. But everything else is the right way, for reading.
It's probably my scan. Mm. My scan is just wrong.
Right.
I've got a page wrong.
Maybe they should have done that.
It's kind of fun. Like it's kind of
that
fun.
That could be good,
I thought,
it doesn't look as if they did that originally.
Yeah. I'll post that on Facebook and see what people think.
Mm. Mm. Yeah. Yeah, because I've noticed as well, so far in this run that he started, have you noticed that every splash page at the beginning is somebody's face in close-up?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, starting with Vision Quest. They've had close-ups of people on every splash page.
Yeah, your next issue is similar to it. Yeah, just
which
check
I
your
think
issue.
Which I think he continues with for most of them. Not all of them, though. I believe there are some that don't start with a face up close, but not many. Yeah.
Well, his artwork.
Up until at least Acts of Vengeance. Then he didn't do that anymore, but the first sort of 10 or so issues that he did, most of them start with the splash pages, someone's close up.
Well, his artwork is, I've always felt, is very cinematic. It almost, you could read it as storyboards for a film with the way he draws. And I don't know if he does it consciously or just the way that's his storytelling. So that you can tell exactly. You can almost see the camera angle the way it would set up if you were actually making this as a film.
Right. Yeah.
And I don't know why Hawkeye is in a motel. Surely he has an apartment or a house, but he has he has quit the Avengers.
Yeah. Well, I'm gonna say maybe he didn't have.
He might not. They live at the compound.
I mean, they've been living at the compound, and he didn't expect that he would be going anywhere, leaving. So he perhaps didn't have anywhere to go in a hurry. So, yeah.
But he disagreed with U.S. agent coming on board. The government appointed him there as leader, and he thought he was leader. So he stormed out, basically. So we see him at some kind of little dive motel, and Bobby comes to visit him. Because they've had some heated words between the last couple issues, because she was the one that was duped into working for the organization that had kidnapped the Vision, and he kind of still blamed her for that, and she apparently, and they get into another heated argument about them not being very supportive of each other.
Yeah.
And she,
because it goes back further to earlier issues where
before Byrne came on. Exactly.
He got involved, with Phantom Rider,
which plays into her. Yeah, which plays in later in this issue too. But she wants to work things out. She wants to see if they can work out their relationship, because she admits that she's still in love with him. So and then we get the Tigra subplot that's been going through, of Tigra becoming more animal like, and we get a little more of U.S. Agent. complimenting the cook on eating. She's happy to be able to provide a hearty meal for him for breakfast. And he says most of them are just eating toast and orange juice. And he points out that maybe he'll have to set up a some kind of a schedule for breakfast.
Yeah, it's going to make it a rule. Yeah, you got to have breakfast. Because it's your best, most important meal of the day.
And then some tiger, we see a mouse and tiger comes in and she's chasing it. And I guess.
I noticed in this part, though, that, well, going back to the previous issues that we covered at the end of the Vision Quest, you know how Tigra was starting to look more cat-like in her face. But here, she's kind of, her face has gone back to looking more human again.
Yep.
Apart from the eyes and the pointed teeth. Yeah. But yeah. And I thought, that's weird. Why has he gone back on that? Because it seemed to be that she was like changing into more of a cat.
But I got the impression that was something that was, it would come and go, that she would kind of lose control and become more animal-like. Mm. And of course, UH agent he hadn't seen her.
Yeah, he's not seen her before this. Yeah.
And he gets a little rough with her. He grabs her by her hair and she just... tries to, like grabbing a cat, she tries to scratch his eyes out, and he gives her a smack across the face to bring her around, and then she skulks off. And then the cook says, oh, well, she's the one who keeps the mice in control, and she thought that was part of her job. That kind of turns him off. But
that's disgusting.
I would think a high-tech building like that should have mice. I don't know.
I don't know. Yeah, I wouldn't have expected them to have mice, but.
And that just shows him a little more. This just reveals more about US Agent, him a little more rigid about rules. He's kind of turned off by. In our previous issue, he was put off by the Vision walking around, but he considered naked.
Yeah, with no clothes on.
No clothes on. Yeah. So he basically forced him to put something on. And he thinks this needs something to do with her. He doesn't want her. She is a human being who should not be eating raw mice. So lays the groundwork to that. And then we kind of cut back to our main story, which is Bobby and Hank on a plane flying to Milwaukee. And we find that she talked him into kind of getting. He's been feeling sorry for himself since he quit. Or he says he got fired.
Yep.
And she's like, well. Let's go check out these Great Lakes Avengers. Maybe it'll take your mind off of it.
Mm-hmm.
And then that's when we find out that the Great Lakes Avengers are responding to some kind of a light show over this building. And then they are, I will say this, they seem kind of organized. Mr. Immortal is barking orders and sends Dinosaur to the top to investigate and the doorman to get Flatman on the inside of the building. And he's worried about, not damaging the building. And we find out it's Hawkeye. He's been using flare arrows to attract their attention. And then, of course, like in typical Marvel, style, there is a misunderstanding. And he doesn't believe that he is really Hawkeye or that Mockingbird is really Mockingbird.
Yeah.
He thinks they're imposters.
I like that.
And he makes some points that, he thinks he can take Hawkeye down too easily.
Yeah.
And then he points out later that, that Hawkeye and Mockingbird are split. So why are they together? And then, what I can only assume is him trying to get away from them. He throws himself off the building and seemingly dies.
Yeah. Throws himself off. He was testing them to see who they were, But
possibly.
I like the dialogue there with that whole scene where he says, somebody, you're dressed as Hawkeye. And he says, dressed as Hawkeye? I am Hawkeye. And then he still doesn't believe him. And then she dives in Mockingbird and whacks him. And then he says, oh, another woman dressed as Mockingbird. And she says, what is it with this dressed as business? Hawkeye is Hawkeye, and I am Mockingbird. And that's when he points out, but they've split up and they're no longer together. Yeah.
Well, Hawkeye has a great line when Big Bertha jumps to the top with Mr. Mordo on her back, and then that's his way up there, and he says, "Get clear now while I take care of this clown." And Hawkeye says, "Clown," he goes, "take spunk to wear a suit like that and call someone else a clown."
Yeah. Yeah, and then there's another good line coming up as well as in another page or so. After they check out Mr. Immortal, and he looks like he's dead because he's fallen about, I don't know how many floors, at least 10, from the roof of that building. So they think he's dead, and then Flatman comes along. Just, who are you? And I'm deputy leader of the GLA. I'm called Flatman. And Hawkeye says, "I don't believe it. You got a partner called Ribbon."
Yep.
Batman and Robin. Flatman and Ribbon.
Flatman and Ribbon.
I like that.
But Mockingbird calls it out. You know, she's just, there's the time for stupid jokes.
There's a dead man here. Yeah. And then he goes, "Well, he's not dead."
And I can't tell from Flatman if he seems to be flat all the time.
Yeah.
Maybe he can convert to that, but even in the apartment when they're all should be kind of relaxed, he still looks like he's flat.
Yeah. I think that, yeah. And wasn't there a character from like the Second World War time though, wasn't there, who was flat? He was in one of those teams, I can't remember which one, with the... during the Second World War, because I read a story in the Marvel 2-in-1 and FF where Thing goes back in time to the wartime, and he joins up with this group. And one of the members is like that. He's like flat. When he turns sideways, you can't see him kind of thing. I just forgot what his name was. Yeah, but he's like that. Yeah,
I'm kind of doing a quick search. I don't see it. He's known some that he's referred to as the 2D something. He has an alias, and apparently he can flatten himself to half an inch thick, and he can stretch. So that's about all he can do.
Yeah.
And then we see Ashley Crawford come down, and she's dressed in her. Like a, I don't know if it's a bathrobe or if it's a...
Yeah, it's like a fancy bathrobe, yeah.
Yeah. And she looks a lot like, and I just realized this, she looks a lot like the Mars twins.
I knew you were going to say that. Yeah, I thought that. Especially on the second panel of the next page, where you've got Hawkeye like in the foreground and she's behind, and the way she's kind of lifting her chin...
Yep.
So Burns drawn her head and face in that similar way to Phoebe Mars, yeah.
It's the hairstyle.
Yeah, I think it's the hair as well.
Yep.
I thought that when I was looking at it the other day. And I like the name as well, Ashley Crawford. So a cross between Laura Ashley and Cindy Crawford.
Probably.
Yeah,
probably. I didn't put that together, but that's probably makes sense.
The supermodels, yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's Mockingbird says that. He goes, "Wait a minute, I know your face. I've seen you on about a million Vogue covers."
Yeah.
And we don't know anything about her. If she's a mutant, or if she obtained her powers, or whatever happened. But she guesses she kind of is a that's why she feels a little bit like the leader. In fact, you would think she'd be more the deputy
leader. Yeah, because she's giving them the headquarters and she's got the money. Yeah.
And they use her private jet to fly around.
Yeah, yeah. I think we find out a little bit more about her in an issue or two from now, I think. Yeah, but pretty good. Yeah, light-hearted action issue. And then, of course, the final page is the prologue to what's going to follow, with the Wanda having a swim and then the telegram arriving. I'm glad you included what it says on that telegram in your synopsis, because the printing in my comic is so faint, I couldn't make it all out. I was trying to read it yesterday. I thought, oh, God, I can't read most of it.
This is in reference to, in the previous issue, we saw kind of this clandestine media group somewhere in Texas that were picking what appear to be mutants, and they pick Wanda. Yes. So this is apparently them sending her a letter saying, hey, we can possibly fix the Vision. We're happy to help, you know, come see us. Yeah. And she's desperate to get her husband back. Mm-hmm. So, and this is a fake place. I looked it up in Texas. There's no place that they mentioned, but I will say the area code they gave, 214, is a Dallas Fort Worth area code.
Right.
So it's somewhere around Dallas or Fort Worth. And that's what we get. She's she reads this and she's interested as to why that it's lettered, or it's addressed to the Scarlet Witch with no return address. But it has a Texas postmark, so you know.
Right.
That's where we end up. So we obviously we're starting this new storyline with Wanda as she goes off to, you know, like I said, which she is just desperate to get Vision back. She feels like, you know, her husband might as well be dead because he's just this emotionless machine. Because we talked about in our last episode that Wonder Man will not allow them to copy his brain patterns onto the Vision.
Yeah, again.
Mm-hmm. Because he felt like they were taken without his permission before because everybody thought he was dead.
So, but this time he's got a choice. And in the next issue coming up in a few minutes, when I read the synopsis, we'll find out why he perhaps doesn't want to do it this time. Yeah.
And I think we all kind of saw that coming when it's revealed what it is. It wasn't like a big surprise. Mm-hmm. But well, if you have anything else on this issue, I think we can jump into issue 47. Yeah,
47.
Which is your
I was just going to say, but it overlaps with what I'm about to say. Just going back to the covers, on the cover of 46, you notice in the corner box, we've got the heads of the main people who appeared in that issue. So you've got Hawkeye and Scarlet Witch, although she was on the last page kind of thing. Tigra, because she made an appearance there fleetingly, and Wonder Man, of course, although I don't remember seeing him much in that issue.
Well, we're missing U.S. Agent, and maybe
U.S. Agent's not on there yet. There. Yeah. But then moving over to the cover of issue 47, as you said earlier, the title has changed to Avengers West Coast from now on. And in the corner box, I like the way, again, they had the heads of the people who it mainly focused on in this issue. So you've got the triangle, if you like, of Scarlet Witch, Wonder Man and Vision, because it's very much heavily about those three in this issue. And then Tigra is there as well, because she has a small appearance in this issue. So I like the way he's moving those heads around, connected to the people who are mostly concerned with the plot line at that particular time.
It's a very kind of noir type cover, because we've got Vision and Scarlet Witch, and she's facing us, obviously, some group. All we see them as shadows, and looks like blinds.
It's like looking through blinds. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah. And they're all in shadow, as if they stood where we would be. Yeah,
exactly. And she's saying, and you can't have the Vision.
You can't have him. Yeah, you can't have the Vision. And they're saying, we don't want him.
We want you.
Yeah. We want you. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And nice picture. Well drawn. I like that.
Yeah. I don't know what he's done for. Is that Zipitone? I think it's Zipitone.
It looks a bit. Yeah. Yeah. Like it, doesn't it? Yeah.
To create the shadows.
Yeah, it's a nice picture, that one. Yeah. Okay, so let's get into this.
Before you get into it, we'll point this out. On the splash page, it still says the West Coast Avengers.
Okay.
It's, instead of changing it to Avengers West Coast. So
right, I've not got it out of the bag yet. Let's have a look.
I wonder if that was
So it does, the West Coast Avengers, yes. So that was probably too late to change or something.
Exactly.
Like
that was probably already to print or to games or something.
Okay. Right. So let's have a look at this issue then, which is Avengers West Coast number 47, cover dated August of 1989. So that means, was it out from April of 89?
It would have been April, because March was April the last 89. Issue.
Now then, I don't know any of the other things Byrne did except for Sensational She-Hulk. It would have been number 4, I believe. Is that right?
It would have been number 4.
He would have done writing and artists on Sensational She-Hulk number 4.
I think he was still writing Avengers.
Writing, it was, yeah. So that would be 305? 305 or 306, right, yeah. Yeah, writing that. I think he'd finished the Many Deaths of the Batman, that's it, right. Isn't it, after part
that was
three.
Just, that's four, finished. Yeah, three, just, yeah, it's finished.
Yeah, yeah. And you said he was writing something else when you introduced your issue.
He wrote the Batman stuff.
Yeah.
And then he was writer and cover artist on Avengers. And then he just did the cover. He was just cover artist on Marvel Age, which was just kind of like a news magazine.
That was it. Yeah. So, yeah. Okay. So that's the other things he did this month. The team, if you like, writer, penciler, John Byrne, inker, Mike Macklin, letterer, Bill Oakley, colorist is again Bob Sharon, which you said that was a change in your issue 46.
Right.
Bob Sharon was the new colorist, but he's still on here. Howard Mackey is the editor, and Tom DeFalco, editor-in-chief. And the title of this issue is With Friends Like These. So, Scarlet Witch begs the help of Hank Pym and T'Challa, the Black Panther, in trying to fully restore Vision to the way he was before he was dismantled and reassembled. However, they are engaged in a critical stage of installing a new computer system, and as Vision seems more or less restored now, they do not see it as an emergency. Scarlet Witch storms off annoyed, and as she leaves the computer center, she passes Wonder Man, who tries to talk to her, but she completely ignores him. Elsewhere, the Wasp is running a training exercise as she goes up against several robots. She's just getting the upper hand when someone terminates the training sequence. It is Wonder Man, and he wants to talk with her. He confesses to Jan that he is in love with Scarlet Witch, and he's surprised when she reveals that she already knows that. Women's intuition, plus the fact that Vision was programmed with Simon's mind, and Vision fell in love with Wanda. So, ergo, she just expects Wonder Man would also feel the same way. She realizes that is why Simon refused to share his mind with Vision again, but that he should not be feeling so down. They're interrupted suddenly by the security monitor showing the unscheduled use of a Quinjet in progress. Cut to US agent who is visiting Tigra's compound quarters. He has not seen her in the last 72 hours. He knocks on the door and Tigra leaps out, too fast for US agent to grab her. He pursues her to the nearby woods, where she waits for him by a tree and begins to flirt with him. Just then, the perimeter alarm sounds as the unauthorized Quinjet launches. US agent runs for the nearest communication panel, where he gets a report from the Wasp. It seems the Vision and Scarlet Witch have taken the Quinjet and are not responding. In the Quinjet, Vision suggests that Wanda should respond to the Wasp, which she reluctantly does. She explains to the Avengers that as none of her teammates, in inverted commas, is interested in helping the Vision any further, she's decided to accept another offer of assistance. They try to talk Wanda round, but she cuts transmission and activates the Quinjet's stealth shield. An hour later, Hank Pym, the Wasp, and Wonder Man arrive at Grosvenor Memorial Hospital, Seattle, which was on the Quinjet's projected flight path, and is where Professor Horton was brought after being liberated from the phony shield base. See issue number 44. However, they discover that Scarlet Witch and Vision are not there and begin to worry about Wanda's actions. Meanwhile, the Quinjet carrying Vision and Scarlet Witch lands in the campus grounds of Saunders College, Texas. The two Avengers are met by a welcoming committee headed by Jeremiah Random, Dean of Robotics. He assures the Vision and Wanda that they will help them in any way they can, and he leads them inside. Outside, the floor beneath the parked Quinjet suddenly folds upwards, crushing it to scrap metal, which then falls into a deep hidden chamber below. At that moment, in Avengers Mansion, New York, an alarm sounds and Captain America rushes to the monitor room. A Quinjet has just been destroyed in Texas, near the town of Absalom. She-Hulk verifies that the Quinjet AV-3071 belongs to the West Coast team, which Cap agrees, and that they should look into this too. Later, back at Saunders College, Dean Random, Ransom I think that should be, isn't it, or Random, assures Scarlet Witch that their cyber systems program will fully restore the Vision to his previous state. Vision is then led away for the first phase of his study, and Scarlet Witch is escorted to her quarters by Dean Random. He opens the door and invites Wanda into a room which resembles an underground subway area with dark pillars from ceiling to floor. A metal door suddenly drops down with a shung, trapping the Scarlet Witch. She moves to use her hex power, but is violently hit with a sonic blast and falls to the floor. She hears Random's voice, "My apologies, Wanda," and looks up to see his face on the wall, which is now a giant screen. He tells her that she is, in fact, the one they really wish to study. She has been selected as a powerful mutant, but one that can still be controlled. He sees mutants, Homo superior, as the next stage of dominance on the Earth. But he hints that some other race seeks to control the mutants and become all-powerful. As Wanda ponders his words, the room starts to fill with a black, sticky tar substance. And Wanda feels it is almost biological, alive, as it starts to engulf her. She falls to the floor and is overwhelmed by the tar as it covers her completely. Meanwhile, back in the Avengers West Coast compound residence of Vision and Scarlet Witch, a new governess attends to Wanda's children. She bends down to retrieve a toy car from under the furniture. But when she turns around to face the two boys, they have disappeared. To be continued.
Very well done. I have to admit, I've read these, but it's been so long since I've read them. I really don't know where this story is going. I don't remember. Mm-hmm. So it's like reading them the first time again.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. I was slogging through that synopsis yesterday. That was the only thing with calling a late recording. I knew I'd have to write the synopsis because I know that no one's done any synopsis for these on the Marvel Wiki. And I thought, oh, there's so much in it. So I was scribbling away yesterday to get this finished. Yeah.
It's a nice little, it's mostly setup. It does a lot of setup. We get more of, we get a desperate Wanda who, it's interesting the way throughout this whole, this issue is that the other Avengers are basically not very sympathetic to her. They're like, yeah, the Vision seems fine. Yeah. Don't worry about it. You know, we're busy.
Yeah.
And she's like, no, my husband's not, it's not my husband. And then the conversation between Janet and Wonder Man, they're both, well, at least she's a little.
Well, I think she's ready she's ready to kind of help him try and sort something out, but then they get interrupted. Yeah.
Well, but she's ready to help Simon, but she says about the Vision.
Yeah.
She basically says he's dead.
Oh yeah, he's dead. One they knew is dead. Yeah.
Yeah, and they're not, and basically kind of telling Simon, well, okay, just kind of move in, you know, just tell Wanda how you feel about her.
Yeah, move in on Wanda now. Yeah,
and he's, you know, and I think he rightly, you know, he's like, no, the way I was raised, you don't do that. You know, that's not right. And,
And to be fair to Hank and T'Challa, though, like they say, they've done as much as they can on rebuilding the Vision and bringing him back to maybe how he was when he first appeared in the Avengers. And the only other thing they could do, Simon won't let them do it. So they can't do any more unless Wonder Man says, okay, they can have my, you know, you can have my mind again.
Yeah. Well,
so really, she's kind of going mad at them, but there's not a lot more they can do.
No, I think she's just, I mean, she's just at her wit's end, stressed out, doesn't know what to do.
Yeah, because it is her husband after all, yeah.
Yeah, and I think it's nice that Byrne writes T'Challa with the point that he has not seen the Vision in a long time, because I guess he's not been with the Avengers, so he seems the same to him. And they're trying to carry over from the Vision quest that they had to install a new tamper-proof computer system, I guess, which I guess T'Challa and Wakanda provided to because of the Vision hacking into the world's computers.
Which is, of course, is important to them to get that up and running. Yeah.
Right. And then, we have a little danger scene. Basically, it's a danger room scene with
the Wasp.
The Wasp training, and then Simon kind of, pouring his heart out to her, and she doesn't know what to do, which I thought this was pretty, pretty well done, because it gives us some of the personal aspects of their relationship. You know, you get. What is he, you know, he is torn. Does he do what I guess would be the right thing and give up his brain patterns to help the Vision? Yeah. Mm-hmm. But he rightfully feels that they were kind of taken from him originally when they thought he was dead. Mm-hmm. And he still wants to think, I don't have the right to step in and take Wanda from the Vision.
Because
I guess legally they're still married.
I remember when I first read this, and I liked the reaction to when he says he's in love with the Scarlet Witch, and Wasp says, "Oh yeah, I know that."
I know that. Yeah.
You know, like, and he says, "You know, like how, when, how?" he can't understand. How can you know that?
Yeah. Well, she's kind of like the reader, like us. We're like, we could tell. We knew that.
Women's intuition and all that, as well. Yeah.
And it makes sense that if the Vision is based on Wonder Man's brain and personality, then...
And he fell for her. Yeah.
Right, they would both be in love with her, right?
Yeah.
And then we get the, you know, a little more with Tigra, which is...
Yeah, with U.S.
This is kind of our B-plot of her. Because when she jumps out the door past him, she looks more animal-like.
Yeah.
And then she's reverted back to her normals, but she's very playful and flirting with him. And he's kind of doesn't know
how to react to
it. He doesn't know what to do with it.
Yeah.
And then she's basically hitting on him, and then they're interrupted with that's a gorgeous shot of the Quinjet blasting out of the side of the mountain.
Yes.
It's a beautiful piece of work. And we're getting more of the Vision is more like. He's much more like Data. He's very cold. He's unemotional. He goes along with whatever she's asking him because he thinks that's what he's supposed to do. And,
Yeah, when they're in the Quinjet, and he says, "Oh, Janet seems somewhat distressed, Wanda.
Yeah.
Perhaps you should respond." I was just going to say, as well, going back to the top of the previous page, just above the Quinjet, I like the way Byrne draws heroes like Cap, or in this case US Agent, when they're in full running mode.
Mm-hmm.
It's really spectacular. Yeah, he does it a bit later on with Cap in when he's sprinting for the monitor room when they hear an alarm go off in the Avengers mansion. He really hits that dynamic pose. Yeah.
And then, of course, Wanda misdirects them, and they show up where they think
she's gone. Yeah,
right. Because Professor Horton's there. Horton, we kind of see him. We see him in the room. I don't know if he's ever revisited. I don't know if we ever see him again in these issues at all. Maybe when we get into
I'm going to say perhaps once more with the torch, but I'm not sure.
When we get to
I'd
that
have to
point.
Look at it again. Yeah.
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 And then, you know, she lands on this this compound, which we really don't know anything about.
Yeah.
Who these people are. They're, I thought his name was kind of a giveaway. His name is Random.
Random, yeah.
Which I don't know if that's just, but like, that's a name I picked. Because he's kind of hinting that when they later are talking, this is after they destroy the Quinjet. With this big car smasher thing.
Mm-hmm.
We see some, it looked like, I guess her students walk up to, and they kind of kick a little piece in there, which tells me
a bit of the debris. Yeah.
Yeah. They're in on
it. Which means they could be mind controlled.
Exactly. They're either controlled or they're in on it.
Yeah.
And it also shows this little piece of debris that plumps down to the very pit, bottom of this pit. And then we see something.
It says blink.
Yeah. And I guess that's like the black box.
I think that's the thing that's alerting the mansion in New York that the craft's been destroyed. Yeah.
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 Yeah. And you're right, that shot of Cap running by the couch, where she hulks on the couch.
Yeah.
She's eating popcorn and reading a magazine.
Yeah. Really dynamic pose in mid-run. Yeah. Yeah. And then they check out the details that it's... it's somewhere in Texas, yeah.
Yeah, they're supposed to.
They decide they're going to check it out.
Mm. Well, he says there. He said since his decision that both teams should function as one, so they all have to respond to it. And then we're back in this compound that they're, you know, spinning this false tale for Wanda to make them think that they can control the vision. And when they ask the vision to go for some tests, he just willingly goes. You know, he's he's like, he is almost like a child. He doesn't have any idea of anything. He's like, he doesn't understand. It's like the Thermians in Galaxy Quest. They don't know anything about deceit or lying or anything. He just trusts everything everybody tells him.
Yeah,
and then she gives him a kiss and tells and she turns away crying because he's still not, you know, he doesn't respond to it at all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there was somewhere where he said something about, when they're shaking hands, Vision and Mr. Random are shaking hands just above the panels where they crush the Quinjet, and Vision's saying, he says, "We can help you." And he says, "I hope so too, sir. Although I am perfectly content with my present form, it seems to be a source of considerable distress to my wife."
Right.
So he's quite happy to be
he's fine.
This android again. He's saying, "I'm okay. I'm just, me.
This is who I'm supposed to be." Exactly.
He doesn't remember what he was. Yeah.
Then they lead her into this, which to me looks kind of like a holodeck.
Well, I nearly said that instead, I thought. But it reminds me of, especially being here in Japan, where there's a lot of subways and undergrounds. Mm-hmm. That's what they're like. They're like kind of tiled in these square tiles all over. Yeah.
Well, I don't remember when we were in Tokyo, but especially when I was in London, the tube station.
Yes,
are very tiled
so
like
I,
that.
I went for that. I thought it reminds me of like an underground tube station, but with these black pillars in the middle, from floor to ceiling. Yeah.
And we still don't know why they're she's hit with some kind of a sonic beam. It kind of just stuns her.
Yeah.
And that's when she comes on. To,
He
talks about he talked about Homo Superior versus
which is the mutants,
right. Mm.
But then he mentions, he says, but for the uncounted millennia, the appearance of mutant genes has somehow stymied us, as if us is different to normal Homo sapiens, as if there's some other kind of race almost. We have not been able to influence them or the mutants they created.
Right, and he says we, and if we are to move onto the new dominant species, which is the mutants, we must develop this facility.
We have to develop this facility. So it's like there's something else that wants to control
the mutants. Some other life form or something that wants to take them over or move into them.
Yeah.
Or, and then
which makes you wonder, are these kind of like aliens or something? Yeah.
It's either an alien or some kind of ancient life form.
That's been
on Earth maybe for, he says, millennia.
She doesn't understand, of course. And then the tar starts to...
You can see it kind of bubbling up in the final panel where behind her. And then they tell her the...
coming through the floor there. Yeah.
That's what she says. She feels it. Feels like I can feel the life in it.
It's live. It's alive, kind of.
Yeah. And then she's... I guess she's surprised that her cloak gets caught in the tar and she pulls on it and it rips.
It rips, yeah.
She says, my cape, it shouldn't have ripped like that. So I don't know if her
which
cape
suggests,
is...
Well, I guess it suggests that the tar is like alive. And so I guess if somebody was holding her cape and so even as she tried to pull it away, something pulled back. It would rip eventually.
Right. Yeah. Well, she says the ooze must have eaten through it.
I took it to be that it's kind of, it's grabbed the bottom of the cape.
Right.
And because it's got a kind of life of its own, it's not just like a liquid, which you would just be able to pull your cape out of it. It's resisting, it's pulling back.
Yep.
And so she tugs and that tugs and the result is the cape tears.
Yep.
That's what I thought.
I thought maybe it was she was implying that maybe her costume's unstable molecules or something.
Shouldn't rip.
For that reason.
And then of course that causes her to fall over into the goop and it just carries on engulfing her.
Well, it says invading me, so that means it's must be maybe taking her over.
Yeah.
Because it does have some kind of a life to it, or maybe it's, they call it the assimilator. So what if they're trying to clone her or copy her genetic structure or something? Because they say they need a mutant that's powerful, but one they can control.
Control,
so I wonder if they are going to try to duplicate her. For something that they can control. And then our final page, our teaser, is this running joke of the nannies keep losing the kids.
Yeah, the kids keep disappearing on all these nannies. Yeah, and this is just the latest one, She gets up with the car and they've gone. But that's...
I kind of know how that's resolved, I think, with the kids. But it's been a while since I read it.
But this story, you say you can't really remember much about how it goes. Yeah, I like this story. It's quite a good one. And I was happy when I saw Cap say that they were going to get involved as well from the East Coast. I thought, oh, yeah, great.
Yeah, we're going to have everybody involved.
So I was looking forward to the next issue because I thought, the East Coasters are coming in as well. This could be good. Yeah.
Yep. All in all, I thought it was a pretty good issue. It sets a lot of stuff up. It keeps moving the stories along. It's, we get the Wonder Man thing is kind of continuing.
Yeah. Yeah.
The kid storyline that keeps, popping up. And then the same with the Tiger story. So we've got about 3-4 stories that are just kind of, he's peppering them in. These like subplots. C-level subplots.
Yeah.
And then the main story is, of course, what's, we lost the Vision. We're getting back, sort of. And now we may have lost Wanda. So we don't know what's going on with that one. I'm interested. Mm-hmm. I'm at the rate. I don't remember. I really don't remember. I remember more of this Torch story that comes on after.
Right,
I don't remember much about this one.
Right. Well, yeah. The next two episodes, sorry, not episode, the next two issues, cover this story.
If we cover this again, then our next episode should resolve these stories, and then we get into Torch. And I think that's his final storyline, isn't it? The Torch storyline?
I think there's one more story after that, which is the one that resolves the children.
Okay, that's with
And then after that, you get the Acts of Vengeance.
Okay, yeah. That's the Master Pandemonium resolves the kids, isn't it?
Yeah, maybe we should go up to the end of that one, which is 52, I think. And then from 53, the Acts of Vengeance begins.
Which we've already covered those. You've covered those. We've already covered those. So, yeah. Well, I think we can go up to 52.
Yeah, up to 52, we'll cover the other stories before that.
I'll cover most of this. All right.
Yeah. It's good. I enjoy the Avengers. Well, they're probably my favorite title. I mean, of all the comics that I have more Avengers than anything else. Yeah.
Really? Not X-Men? Yeah.
No, not X-Men, no. Although I've read all the original X-Men, the old X-Men, I don't have the actual real issues. I've got them in some kind of form, the essentials, things like that. And then I only started collecting it again from about issue 97. And then, of course, I got all the Byrne ones. And I carried on until about 200 before I stopped reading X-Men.
Oh, okay.
But then since then, when I had to downsize my collection when we were leaving Britain, all the X-Men after when Byrne finished, I got rid of. Yeah, they had to go. I had to make the chop in various places. So, yeah, everything that was Byrne I kept.
I started reading X-Men late. I started reading about 185, 86, I think.
Right.
But I've got, from back collecting, I've got a handful of issues below 100. I've got a lot of the Byrne ones. I don't have all the Byrnes. From about 150 to, I think, about 500, I've got all those issues. I was reading.
Yeah. I mean, I regret not having some of them. You always do this afterwards, though. But I had to make a decision at the time. And so everything, as I say, after Byrne finished, I wasn't happy with a lot of the stories that followed anyway. So I thought, oh, I'll get rid of those. But there are one or two when I think back now that I think, I wish I'd kept the one, for example, where they went into space and fought the Brood and everything, and Binary was introduced and stuff like that.
Yeah, there's
the
Paul Smith
ones weren't too bad.
It's otherwise kind of forgettable, but it's when Gambit gets introduced, so now that one's worth a lot just because
he brought in that kind of thing. Issue. But Avengers, I've got almost all of the stories in one form or another right up to about 375. And I actually went up to about 390 something, but the thing that finished me off with that was the Crossing. I hated that story. And that's when I stopped reading Avengers altogether. They got the chop then. And I didn't pick them up again until Busiek and Perez's run.
Yeah, and that's when I came was, back.
And I was late collecting that. I didn't get it when it first came out.
It's after the Onslaught, right?
But I didn't start collecting that until around about 2004 or 5, because I was in New Zealand then, and I found this comic shop. And that's where I discovered, you know, that Busiek and Perez were now doing the Avengers, and it looked good, and it looked like they'd sorted out all the rubbish that they were doing with them before. So I started collecting the back issues on that.
Amazing Spider-Man is probably the one I've got the most.
Yeah.
I would say from about 75 to 700, I've got all the issues.
Right, yeah. Spider-Man. I liked Spider-Man, and I did have a lot of the Spider-Man stories from the beginning up to about nearly the end of the DeFalco Friends run. That's where I stopped getting them. That's where I stopped actually buying them.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, again, but a lot of the early ones were in black and white reprints that we got in Britain.
Right.
And again, they suffered from the chop when I had to downgrade the collection for leaving Britain. So all the black and white stuff, except Avengers, I got rid of. Mm. So that's where the bulk of my Spider-Man stuff went. I've only got the Spider-Man ones that are the actual real
ones.
American issues. Yeah.
Well, they're, it lets you actually physically want to own the comics. They're so easily, if you just want to read them, they're so easily available. You
can read they are now. Everywhere. Yeah, you can read them online and everything.
And I've got a ton of them just digitally that I've got from Brian. That's usually what I read, because I can't dig my stuff out when we're going to cover it. I just read it, sometimes I'll have to buy it, or I've got a bunch of omnibuses, things like that.
Yeah.
It takes up a lot of space.
It does seem.
Yeah. Well, you got anything, final words on West Coast 47?
I think we covered that one well enough. Yeah.
I look forward to the next one. I don't know if it'll just be who it'll be. Maybe me, you, and Kirk, or we'll try to get. I know Brian is busy. John's busy. So life gets in the way.
I'm waiting for John to finish with his busyness so we can get back to X-Men: The Hidden Years as well.
Exactly. Look forward to that.
Yeah.
Well, Nigel, I want to thank you as always. It's a pleasure to record with you. And
thank you.
I want to thank everybody if you've listened this long. I want to thank you and look for us in the future with, we don't know what's going to maybe more West Coast Avengers. We are talking possibly doing some Alpha Flight. You're still doing your run with Hidden Years with John. And I know Brian has got something in the works. I don't know what it is, but he's working on some kind of a project or something that he's kind of hasn't really told us what it is. But we've got plenty of stuff coming. So just look for us on Facebook. If you want to get a hold of us, you can reach us at gottagetburned@gmail.com. Or probably more quickly to get a hold of us, you can just comment on Facebook or send us an IM or something. That's where the shows are posted, and that's where we have most of our interaction with our listeners. That's where we post teasers. Kirk's been good about posting images about teasing the shows that are coming up and things of that nature. You've been doing that with the Hidden Years. So that's a great way to kind of whet the appetite for what we're doing.
So lots to look forward to.
All right, Nigel, you're just starting your day. I'm ending my day. So again, I want to thank you for coming on this Sunday night, Monday morning.
I've enjoyed it.
So for Third Degree Burn, I am Tim Elliott.
And I'm Nigel Spink.
Thanks for listening.
Bye.
Beware of the blob, it creeps and leaps and glides and slides across the floor, right through the door and all around the wall. A splotch, a blotch, be careful of the blob.
Thanks for listening. You can find us and many other great shows at tutufreaks.com. That's TWOTRUEFREAKS.com. Third Degree Burn is spelled with the number 3, RDDEGREEBYRNE, and is part of the 22 Freaks network of shows. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter. Just look for Third Degree Burn, spelled with the number 3, and Burn spelled BYRNE. Compliments, complaints, and recipes can be sent to gottagetburned@gmail.com. That's GOTTAGETBYRNED@gmail.com. Drop us a line and tell us how we're doing. Till next time, this has been Third Degree Burn.
Some men aren't looking for anything logical, like money. They can't be bought, bullied, reasoned, or negotiated with. Some men just want to watch the world burn.